Look, guys, I know the pandemic was hard on a lot of us. I get it. I really do. But now it's time to get back to normal. And what a better way to get back to normal than to go back to sporting events, to return to concerts. I mean, I already can't wait to start adding to my bucket list with each of those type of avenues. And what a better way to do it than to go through megaseats.com. This episode is brought to you by megaseats.com. And honestly, since the pandemic is over, these are the biggest things that I'm looking forward to. And the best thing about Mega Seats actually is that the price that you see when you purchase a ticket for any of those events, that's the price you pay. How many times have we went to other third-party sellers and found out, oh, wow, that's a great price. But then you click on it and then a service fee pops up and then something for like the candy wrapper of something you might buy or maybe the wrapper for a straw is what they're going to charge you extra for because you got to tip the popcorn guy. No. That doesn't exist with Mega Seats. You see, at megaseats.com, the price you see is the price you pay. Unless you use code SSAWNETWORK. That's right. You go to megaseats.com. You see a concert that's coming up. You click purchase. That's the purchase price that you get. And then you put in the code SSAWNETWORK, and they take 10% off of that. Go to megaseats.com. Get back to life. Use the code SSAWNETWORK and save 10% in the process. Let's go. What's up, ladies and gentlemen? It's the Cover Zero Podcast, doing a week 18 preview for the first time ever.
Ever.
Considering the fact that we have never had this many games in an NFL season, it is only right that we come at you with everything that matters for it. It's myself, Jordan. I'm joined by Jay. How you doing, bro?
Doing good, bro. Doing solid. Can't wait for these weekend's games, bro. I'm excited. I'm hyped up.
I'm hyped up too, and how fitting is it that we have a game in which the Raiders are already faced with a playoff game during a week that would already be considered a playoff game in any other NFL season that we would have had?
Right. Yeah.
Would you have had it any other way?
No, I wouldn't actually. This is pretty much how you cap the season, especially for you know, two teams that's literally, you know, two rival teams, two teams that's battling for that last spot in a conference that's very tough, in a division that's very tough. And, you know, it makes sense, you know, not to go too deep because obviously we're going to talk about it, but
yep.
This is not the only time that we play the Chargers, the Raiders, that is, you know, for anybody that don't know, everybody should know by now. This is not the only time we played the Chargers, you know, for trying to get into the playoffs. You know, trying to clinch a spot or clinch a spot, whatever it is, this is nothing new. New players and new different coaches and stuff, but us fans, we've seen this before over the last, I'd say, at least 7 years, 10 years.
There's a lot to get to with this week. There's a couple of games that we're going to preview most definitely, as you alluded to. We are most definitely and for sure going to touch on the Raiders and the Chargers game. We are also going to touch on the Rams and the Niners, considering the playoff implications at hand with that one. But the first place we're going to start are the hot seats. Which head coach do you think is going to be gone? Which head coach will be retained? That's going to be something that's going to start to really relinquish or at least show what's going to go down over the course of the next several weeks in the NFL. But how we're going to do it here on the Cover Zero Podcast is we're going to go over a list of names and we're going to talk about how secure we think they are, if we think they're gone, if we think they're going to stay, you know, and how maybe drastic it needs to be that they either retain this coach or they let him go. And the one that I want to start with is with this one team that at one point when we revisited at least the playoffs, that would make the most sense to us when we got into the weeks that started to be, you know, followed by the word team. 13, 14, 15. Mike Zimmer, starting with the Vikings. We thought they would be here in the playoffs. They are not. They got eliminated last week, as we already discussed. Right. But what is going to be the level of Mike Zimmer keeping his job? Do you think he's here next year? Do you think that they hang on to him? Where are you at with this guy?
You know what? This is one where this can go either way. This one really can go either way. I think Mike Zimmer is a really great coach. You know, I'm actually one of the ones that didn't have the Vikings. If we go back in first, maybe the NF, I would say maybe the preview. I think that's when I spoke. I was down on the Vikings this year. You know, because they last year, because of the young players they had, just wasn't sure if they were well developed, if they were ready to go. You know, and just unsure with the offensive line. I still had questions. So I didn't have them making it this year. And with Mike Zimmer, I just think, you know, if he's let go, it's really because I think the organization, they just really want to change. You know, there's somebody out there maybe that they're eyeing that maybe can, you know, really elevate the talent and, you know, and the time of what Mike Zimmer has done has kind of reached its peak. That's the only thing I can see, because he's not a terrible coach. He's still a really good coach. I feel like he would get other interviews. That's how good I think he is. I think if he gets fired, he'll get an interview. Unless he wants to take off a year. If he wants to take off some time or something like that, then, you know, I can see that happening. Maybe him coming back in, you know, the following year, 2023 or something like that. But, you know, I think that if he gets let go, he'll get some other opportunities. Do I think he's going to get let go? I'm going to say he stays. You know, I think they give him another year to, you know, see if he can get them back into the playoffs and make a run. I'll say this, if he gets another year, he would have to make the playoffs, and I think he would at least need to make a run to maybe consider him getting some type of extension or staying with the team. But I'm going to say he stays.
So you have Minnesota retaining Mike Zimmer. I got to disagree, man.
Yeah.
I think they move on. I think it's time.
Well, you had them going. You not only had them making the playoffs, but you had them going pretty deep, didn't you, in the playoffs?
No, I had them as the wild card.
Right.
I had them as a wild card.
Okay.
And that was it. I had them reaching it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was it. And really, the reason is, they've ran the course of what Mike Zimmer was going to and was supposed to provide for this team. I've talked about for a while how the NFL now in 2021, you need to be able to have that offensive mind, or at least once the defensive mind has been worn stale, he can't necessarily be the driver of the ship. I still think Mike Zimmer would be an amazing defensive coordinator for a team right now.
So you don't
to where Mike Zimmer doesn't have to worry about all the other fires that a head coach has to put out, right? Like, a head coach has to deal with a lot of things. He has to wear a lot of different hats in a lot of different scenarios. But if all Mike Zimmer has to do is focus on pressure packages, sign me up. Give me that guy. Because as it stands right now, the Vikings haven't missed the playoffs in back-to-back seasons since Zimmer took the job in 2014. But right now they will. And it's just kind of, I think, reached the point to where we can't do anything more underneath him at the helm of the regime. Gotta let him go.
It could happen. It definitely could happen. I wouldn't be shocked if it happened. I just think because there's other things that is wrong with that team. Like Kirk Cousins, he actually had a solid season. So
he did.
Put anything on Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, no, he did.
Yeah, he had a solid season. The defense still could use some work. The offensive line, you know, it's inconsistent at times, but, you know, they can get a little better there. But I just think if the talent develops, if you can get some of that, more of that defensive talent to work, because they've had some good drafts. They've had some really good drafts, you know, over the last few years. That talent can really come together. Sometimes it takes a little minute for these players to really, you know, develop into the player you drafted to be. Mm-hmm. You know, I think Zimmer is back on track. You know, the team, the defense is back on track. The offense, I think, will be fine.
You know, do you think, though, the offense underneath Zimmer has endured any, like, do you think Zimmer has, to some degree, put, like, a limit or a limitation or a ceiling on what this offense could be because of his defensive-minded philosophy as a head coach?
Not really, because, I mean, the offense has been able to do both. They've been able to pass the ball, and they've been able to run the ball real well. I mean, at certain points. Now, this season, no, last season. I mean, well, this season, kind of. The run game was, I don't know where it's ranked. It wasn't the same. And like I said, Kirk Cousins had a, you know, he had a solid year, you know, and last year was kind of similar to that. But the other years, this team has always been balanced with the run and passing. So I don't think anything was really, you know, limited. I think it was kind of like a balanced offense. Now you did, now I'll say this, the team was still known for their defense. I mean, that hands down, there was no different. I mean, when you thought of the Minnesota Vikings, you thought of the defense. And then you thought of some studs that they had on offense for sure. But that defense is what always stood out.
This year, though, that defense is kind of like, it's not the same.
That's what I'm saying. If these players can kind of develop, because they've had good drafts and drafted some really good defensive players. Players that, you know, that a lot of people was high on, including myself. But I think, you know, that's why I can see him being let go, because like we both said, I mentioned that it's the peak. He's reached his peak. So I can see why the owner, GM, and they'd be ready to move on, you know. But then at the same time, it's like you would be moving on because you see somebody that's a better fit. And like you said, maybe an offensive-minded guy this time, you know, to really maybe get the offensive going, the offense going, you know. But you're not getting rid of Mike Zimmer because he's a bad coach.
Right. It's his time to
– might be his time.
Both places need to start like a different, like, you know, we've kind of ran the course of what it is.
Right.
That's what I was saying. I just hope he's a DC. Let me put it this way. We've talked about it on this show where we're at with Gus. Gus has got our defense back to being competitive. Depending on who we go with as a different head coach, I'd love it if Mike came over and was our DC.
That would be a really good move. Really good
love
move.
That.
Yeah. That would be a really – there's another guy, actually, though. I would get real to – if I say the guy, there's another guy that used to be his head coach that's already being rumored and all this other, you know, crazy scenarios and whatnot. But anyway, if Vic, who's another guy we're going to talk about, gets let go. Now, I know he runs a different scheme. I get it. He runs a different scheme. That man as a defensive coordinator, man. And there's
Vic
a guy out there.
Vic or Mike as DC?
I'm going to say Vic, bro.
I'm Mike.
Only why I can say Vic, I wouldn't argue that, though, because Mike, he runs a better scheme fit for our players. So I can see that working. I can see that work. But I also, because Vic is so good with putting players in the right position and bringing out the best in their abilities, that I think he could make it work. Almost kind of like a Wade Phillips. I've seen Wade Phillips go to teams where they was running 4-3s. And then, you know, he run a really good 3-4 over there. You know, I think Vic could do the same thing. But and people are asking, like, well, why are you saying Vic is defense coordinator and y'all got Gus and y'all head coach? Just later on during the process, I'll talk about that later on. You know, not that I heard anything. It's just Vic is a possibility of being let go. I don't think he's going to retire. I think he'll be a DC. And if, because one of our teams is on this list as well, if our head coach gets let go.
Well, our head coach, as well as the coach that you just got done discussing and vying for, Vic Fangio, is the next man up.
Right.
On our list as to who is to stay, who is to go. Should he stay or should he go?
He's gone, bro. He's
got to be gone.
And I tried to tell these, look, man, let me tell you something. I tried to tell these Denver fans.
Do you think the Denver fans really want him to stay, though?
No, they don't. No, they don't want him to. Right. No. That's the thing. They don't want him to stay, but some of them thought that he was going to be a solid head coach. And I never thought that was a good hire. I love Vic as a defensive coordinator. Kind of like how you feel with Mike. I think Vic is way more suited to be a defensive coordinator. Just like Wade Phillips. There's guys out there that maybe had a couple solid seasons. Vic never had a solid season. Wade, I think, had one season with 10-6 or whatever. But outside of that.
Wade got a Super Bowl ring as a DC.
I'm talking about as a head coach, though.
Oh, I got you. I got you.
With Dallas and him.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, he's not somebody that is fit to be a head coach. Neither is Vic. Some guys are really, truly meant to be a defensive coordinator. And I think Vic is one of those guys. And I think, you know, he's definitely a guy that would get a job real quick. See, Mike, like going back to him real quick, he's one of those guys. I think, like I said, he could sit out. Somebody may call him and say, hey, look, you want to be a defensive coordinator? He may say, no. No, I'm going to wait it out. I'm going to see if I can get a head coaching gig somewhere else next year. You know, because he has proven himself. He's done some good things over there in Minnesota. Vic hasn't did anything with Denver. I mean, and I'm not saying this to be a Raider fan. I'm just speaking the truth. I just didn't think he was going to fit with any team to be a head coach. I think he's better fit as a defensive coordinator. So, yeah, I think he's gone.
I would have to say he's gone to
George
Patton, though. Offense. The only thing is,
I think they go offense.
You think they hire an offensive coach?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, they're going to have to hire an offensive coach and get themselves a QB.
Yeah.
Because until those two things happen, Denver's going to continue to be where we love them to be, which is in the ass juice of the AFC West.
Yeah. You know, what we want. You know,
so. Exactly. Love it.
If they make a couple, you know, because obviously we've heard of some different, you know, we've heard of Russ, Aaron Rodgers, different QBs. Obviously, we don't want to see it, but those type of QBs Russ, I think, will be available, actually. I think Russ is gone. I think he's out of there. Aaron Rodgers, I still think he's out of there, but, you know, there's rumblings maybe that he may stay. So we'll see what happens there. But if those QBs are available, you best believe that Denver's definitely gonna be trying to grab one of those QBs for sure. You know, and they're gonna put a head coach, I think, going back to the offensive minded, you know, because they got the defense real. They have the defense is there. I think if they can get an offensive minded guy that can be really creative.
Yeah, that will get them in the right path.
Yeah.
For sure would. The only thing that I think that Vic at least has going for him right now is that George Patton is their GM, and he's in his first year with this team. And the question would be to Vic, granted, I'm in agreement with you. I let go of the man. But what does George Patton do? Does he clean house and give Fangio another shot with a new staff? Or does he just simply look at the fact that, look, this team has missed the playoffs for the last 6 straight seasons. Vic, you've done nothing to get us better. We got to move on. I got to maximize this defense, just like you were saying. They've invested resources in that defense when they maybe should have invested resources elsewhere. The one I'm thinking about is just simply this recent first round when they grabbed Patrick Surtain too and could have took one of the quarterbacks, could have took Justin Fields, could have took Mac Jones. You might feel better about the trajectory of the team, but honestly, you still can't say that I think that Patrick Surtain, too, was a bad draft pick because that kid is nasty.
No, that's the thing, though. They've drafted well. They have drafted well over the last couple of few years. They've drafted really well. But, I mean, to go back to what you were saying, I still think he's gone.
I do too. I mean, I would do that as well. It just becomes, I guess, the question that changes too.
I get it. But see, they've already switched out. Like, for example, okay, so the offense is what's mainly struggling, right? We all know the defense is there. They got the players. They got the head coach and those defense, you know, whatever, right? Players that fit the scheme, all of that. They need, maybe another offensive coordinator. But if they happen to change staff members, and obviously it would be, maybe on the defense. Maybe they'll change the linebacker coach. I don't know. Maybe they'll change one of those coaches. But for the most part, it would probably be the offensive coordinator, who is Pat Shurmur. That would, if they end up doing something like that, say they do go that route, that would be the third offensive coordinator under Vic Fangio. So they've already changed up, you know.
Yeah. The staff. No, yeah, yeah. Of course. That's why I would get rid of the man. I'd be like, look, we need new dudes. That's Joe Brady, you want to come over here?
Yeah, that could happen.
You know, I mean, something like that. That's what I would do. So yeah, we agree that Vic is gone then.
Yeah, no, he's gone, and the GM should agree too. I don't. you know, he could look into it and say, hey, look, you know, we keep you getting another offensive coordinator. But if you look at the resume and history and all of that, I don't know if that make too much of a difference. Maybe it do. You still need a QB. I just think making drastic changes on that offense, starting with the head coach, getting the offensive-minded guy, and then getting the QB is where they need to go. But, you know, if they go the other route, they keep him. That'll be good, too. For Rose, that'll
be good. So. Yeah. So that would be a focus on two defensive coaches in Zimmer and in Fangio. But then to kind of shift gears a little bit with a couple of people that have been mentioned as being on the hot seat or at least being in a position to where their 2022 is not secure are the only two interim head coaches we saw on the sideline in 2021. And that's Rich Bisaccia taking over for John Gruden after his resignation, along with Daryl Bevel, who filled in for Urban Meyer after the where in the world is Urban Meyer's logic, not Carmen Sandiego. But where is Urban Meyer's logic after he was let go? Right. So, right. We'll start with Rich to start with the silver and black. You know, if he get, let me ask you it this way. Let me ask you it this way with Rich. If the Raiders pick up two more wins, we will, of course, get to the first win that needs to be happened before the second win can even be have the potential to take place. If Rich Bisaccia picks up two more wins in the next 2 weeks, is he retained?
I think he has a better chance. I definitely think he has a better chance. Yeah, for sure. I think it still depends on how the team really plays, you know. And I say that because the defense is playing really well. Over the last few weeks, the Raiders defense has been playing really well. The running game is picked up. But the passing game, it looks good in spurts, but then they're struggling. So I think it depends on how they win. If that scenario goes down, I think it depends how they win. I mean, if it's like if we blow them out, like the Chargers next week, and then we go into a playoff game and have a convincing win, I think Rich is right there. I think at that point now, you're really – but if it's like close wins, kind of like the comebacks, or the, I still think.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I could see that. I want so bad, and we'll get into this more later. I just want so bad for Derek Carr to have that second win. That first postseason playoff win.
Yeah.
And if Rich is the coach when it happens, knowing the type of guy that Derek Carr is, he'd vie for him. So maybe what I think happens with Rich is that he doesn't get the head coaching job, but to keep him on the staff because they recognize he's an amazing man to have in the building.
Well, I think if that happens, like, you know, if we bring in another head coach, I think that head coach, whoever that may be, you know, he may be up to keep him rich. But normally
they clean house.
Yeah, they're out. No, not even so much them. It's they don't want it. I mean, they it's like a demotion type deal. Yeah. Now, with Rich, it would kind of feel like, well, you know, I mean, took over a position that I didn't think I was going to take over at this point in time. So he may be okay with it. He may be okay with going back to special teams. But most times, guys don't want to be because they feel like they're demoted. You know, at least that's what I would think. I don't know
personally. But. For the other interim head coach, Daryl Bevel, Jacksonville got to bring in somebody to make right with Trevor Lawrence. Daryl Bevel cannot be that guy. Let's start right there. He cannot be the guy to groom Trevor Lawrence and what might save Khan's job. So, if it's not Daryl Bevel, who is it?
Well, they just interviewed Jim Caldwell today. That's somebody that I definitely would hire. I think he did a really good job over there in Indianapolis.
In Detroit, yep.
Yeah, well, Indianapolis, but he didn't get the credit really because of Peyton Manning. So I was like, okay. But then he went over there in Detroit, and that's when you got to really see what kind of good head coach he can be. And then he got fired and shouldn't have got fired.
Right, exactly.
That was their last winning season. That was their last winning season. Jim Caldwell, he was the last one that brought – and I think when they didn't make the playoffs though, right? I think they didn't make – I want to say they missed out that year. I want to say they missed out, but they definitely – that was the last time they had a winning season of 10-6. And he shouldn't have got fired. He did. I think he would be a pretty good hire, and they should hire him to be the next head coach. I think because he's worked with some good QBs. You got to look who he's worked with, the Matthew Stafford. He's worked with the Peyton Mannings, you know, with veteran and up-and-coming promising QBs. I mean, you got to, you know, and then somebody like Trevor Lawrence, you know, I think that would do dividends. I think it would really work out for him. You know, there's other guys out there, though. There's other guys out there. I mean, and like you said, too, Joe Brady's out there. I mean, maybe Jim gets hired, and maybe he hires Joe Brady as his offensive coordinator. You know, that could really work out for Trevor. So there's some good options out there. But Jim is definitely, he would definitely be somebody that would be on one of my, you know, as far as all the guys they've interviewed or I've heard them interviewing, he would be number one on my list.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. But either way, yeah, Bevel's gone. Yeah, I'm with you on who could be number one for this guy. And I mean, there's a lot of different options you can go. No one would ever scoff at Brian Daboll being the head coach of a Trevor Lawrence quarterback team. I mean, Eric Bieniemy, the usual suspects that we have recently rattled out to be the next up-and-coming head coaches in the NFL. I'd love either one of them. So yeah, that would make a lot of sense. But Daryl Bevel would not at all. So he's got to be gone too. Now we'll move into the next four candidates that we have right now. And we're going to start with a Matt. And we're going to start with Matt Rhule. David Tepper gave this man a 7-year deal when he took over the reins. Because he knew that the turnaround was going to take time. And he knew the rebuild would take time. I commend the patience as far as a process level management and approach goes with it. I really do. But has Matt Rhule showed enough throughout the course of these last two seasons, when up to this point he's only won 5 games, and the only reason that he may not win 5 games is because the NFL agreed to expand its schedule to one more game during the 2021-2022 season? I mean, I think honestly, because they gave him such a long time, he's at least okay for next year, because he has one area and he has a long leash to where he can simply say, look, I need more quarterback competency. And they'll probably give it to him. Right. Whether or not he is deserving of that long leash for lack of quarterback competency should be granted to him. Yeah, I don't agree with that. But I still think that ownership will give that to him. Right. He had a role in bringing in all these quarterbacks that didn't amount to what he wanted them to be. And it was like there was that meme going around for a while where the Panthers are paying Cam Newton, and they're paying Cam Newton's replacement. They're paying then the replacement for Cam Newton's replacement, and paying the replacement for the replacement all in one course of a season.
Right.
While that meme is true, you don't give a man a 7-year deal if within 2 years you're ready to let him go, if patience was your pillar. So he's going to get one more year. He's going to get that. And, you know, whether or not that's deserving, that's a whole nother different type of conversation. Would I, if I was a GM, I don't know if I would have ever gave him, any person, a 7-year deal with the way the NFL works now. That's a lot. That's a lot of trust for someone entering into his first job, into a buzzsaw that the NFL can be. I mean, you can have these amazing, you know, these amazing splash hires that occur when you find yourself a Sean McVay, when you may, you know, go ahead and attain somebody of that nature. But for every Sean McVay, there's somebody who's even less known than Sean McVay was when he first got the job. There's the Urban Meyers, and it can look like that. There's the Steve Spurriers. All the more reason why I'm going to give you an option and a chance and some time to prove it. And if your time throughout that length doesn't prove to be fruitful, I'm not going to be tied to a contract. I'm going to be tied to my motives.
Yeah.
So, but if you tie yourself to that contract, you got to give this man a 3rd year at least.
Yeah, you got to. And it's crazy. It's crazy that it's coming from me, because I remember when the deal first struck, when that happened, I thought it was stupid. I thought it was one of the stupidest moves that year, you know, because he's not proven in the NFL. I spoke on this so many times. I spoke on it on the page. I spoke on it on the pod. you know. And then in college, he was able to turn around some schools and whatnot, and did some solid things. But it wasn't to the point where it was, oh my God, this guy's the next, you know, Saban or something. Like, it just what he wasn't that. So I just didn't see what they saw. Now, however, last year I thought he did better than I thought he would. Not as far as necessarily with wins and losses, just more so as a coach. I thought that he handled that team pretty well. The draft went real well. And then this year, they had a really good draft again, and they started off real strong. He brought in, you know, they had Joe Brady. I just thought that they were really making some really good moves, and we spoke on them early on into – we all did, but I know I was high on them, thinking that maybe, you know, they may win more games than we think they will, you know, because of the way they were playing. And so with that being said, it starts to fall down. Sam Darnold's having turnovers. You know, he's seeing what ghosts again. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? He just looked bad, you know. And then they get rid of Joe Brady, which I thought was a stupid move.
Yeah, shocked. That shocked the NFL. Like,
it did. And that, you know what though?
It happened.
It really did, bro. And you know what's crazy? It shocked me and the fans. I'm sure it shocked everybody. Because to the point where it was almost, it made me think, well, maybe something happened behind the scenes. Maybe something happened in you know, the front office. Maybe he got into it with somebody. Because how do you just get rid of, you know, that was like the defense is becoming a staple. But that offense was moving. Was that Sam Darnold looked like a different QB. You know, now all of a sudden, you know, yeah, he's doing some things that he did back in New York. You're blaming that on Joe Brady? It just didn't really add up to me. So, you know, I thought maybe he got into it with somebody. And that's what made me kind of take him off my list as far as being the upcoming head coach, because I'm trying to figure out more stuff. What happened? You know, because that's kind of weird. Then we thought maybe, well, you know, they forced Matt Rhule to get rid of somebody. Mm-hmm. At least I remember us all talking about that on the pod, that, you know, maybe his hand was forced. And so, they got rid of him. If that's the case, they didn't improve.
It hasn't worked. And it seemed like a lot of times with this team that they're almost just like, yeah, let's make a move as if we're just very close to achievement. Yeah, let's make trades for Stephon Gilmore, even though we just drafted a corner in the first round. We still have Dante Jackson. We didn't think we needed to grab a quarterback when we had Darnold. But we couldn't even make it through the first season with Darnold. We then brought in Cam Newton. Cam Newton didn't really even work. So we're still going to use PJ Walker. Like, it's just like they're almost just, let me have this box of Band-Aids that I can apply to whatever type of trip that I make along the way in whatever this process is that I'm doing.
And see, that's what makes me question this too with Matt Rhule, because they got to be talking to him too. I mean, he's got to be in those discussions. Like, you know, well, what do you think about Sam Darnold? You think he can make it work? Yeah, I think we could. You know, with Joe Brady, yeah, I think we definitely. You know what I mean? So when it doesn't work, then it's also on those coaches as well.
Yep.
So I mean, I don't know, but I do think he deserves another.
Yeah. I mean, I think ultimately, yeah, we both agree he's safe for now. He hasn't done anything to this point to prove that he's safe for beyond. So he's on his last lifeline.
Yeah.
The other Matt that's in the fold, Matt Nagy.
Like you said, real quick, just the patience, what you were saying, they give him a 7-year deal, you gotta at least give him that 3 year. At least.
Yeah, yeah. If you give him 7, you gotta give him 3.
Yeah. At least.
You're right. Yeah. So he's good. Matt Nagy, though, who was initially hired, which was what, back in 2018?
I think so.
Yeah, that seems so long ago. Hired back in 2018 to be the man that was elected to turn the offense around in Chicago. And since then, they have scored the 8th fewest points in the NFL. There's two schools of thought with this. One school of thought is that, gee, Matt Nagy never really had a quarterback that was worth the salt to be able to turn that offense around, even if he had the wherewithal as a head coach to do it. Because We know he, in a lot of ways, his coaching debut is tethered to Mitch Trubisky. Now, the other side of that is, well, even with Mitch Trubisky, and even with how he has been as a head coach, the play calling looks better when you just simply take Matt Nagy out of the equation. And you let Bill Lazor call those plays. Be it with Mitch Trubisky, be it with Justin Fields, be it with Nick Foles, be it with Andy Dalton.
Yeah.
I mean, we just had this hodgepodge going on at that position right now. So I think for Matt Nagy to blame the QB for his shortcomings, that's, of course, the leg that he has to stand on, but there's not a lot of validity there for me. I think he's out. I think it's time to go. I think a lot of the NFL is pointing in that direction as well. Do you agree, Jay?
I want to see how they do this last game. I feel like if they win these last three in a row, then, you know, and I'm kind of curious, real quick, I'm just curious where Ryan Pace stands right now. I don't know what, you know, if he's going to be let go, is it a possibility of him being let go? If not, I could see Matt Nagy coming back if he win this last game convincingly. I could see them bringing him back, bro. I could see them bringing him back because they would probably look at it like, well, Justin Fields is getting it together. He finally got the QB he needs. They won three straight. The team is playing strong.
But he didn't even win that last one with Justin Fields.
Well, but the game before that he did.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he won that one. Yeah. But then, like, the one against Foles, like, or with Foles, I mean, like, that's, they look, I mean, I don't know how much better they really looked throughout the course of the game, but they got the win. But, like, let me ask you it this way, bro. Would you bring him back?
No.
If you're Pace?
if it's me, I'm not bringing him back.
Yeah, no, it's not Ryan Pace, it's Josiah.
Yeah, if it's me, yeah. If I'm the GM, no, I'm not bringing his ass back. No, because they got enough talent. And they got enough. They just drafted a young QB there who we like. You go out there, you get. I would see. The thing is, you can go both ways. You can. I think you would. Yeah, I still think they should go offensive minded because of the young QB they drafted. But they could go defense as well. And that defense they still got talent. They're getting older. They still got a lot of talent back there as well. So they can go either way with that team. That team is talented, you know. And Matt Nagy has been disappointed. He's been really disappointed. I mean, when he was over there in Kansas City, all of us on SSAW, shout out to Paige, we all was high on him. We thought that he was going to be pretty good. And I remember telling Gibson, look, the only concern I have really with him is not really having enough time to really call the plays, like having full control of the offense. Because Andy Reid called the plays for the most part when he was there, but I think Andy Reid gave up the playbook the last year or half.
Yeah, he did for half the season. You're right.
Yeah. Yep. You know, and then he became a head coach. And it was almost like if this doesn't work, it would be something like, okay, him not being able to run the offense we thought he would be able to run. And part of that being because maybe he didn't call the plays long enough over here in Kansas City. And we look now, we look what's going on here. It's just the offense looks confused. And it shouldn't look that way. But that's the way it's looking. Bill, like you said, Bill Lazor, when he's calling the plays, when he's running that offense, the offense looks a whole lot better.
Then Matt Nagy.
Then he don't even be making sense. He gets in the press conference and he be making like he don't really want to say who's calling the plays. And, you know, he just, you know, to me, some of his responses and answers just don't be adding up either, you know, throughout the last couple of years, you know, with this whole Bill Lazor, who's calling the plays and all, then the QB situation, you know. So I would let him go. But because Ryan Pace is one of the worst.
Yeah, I would too.
Yeah. You know, but because Ryan Pace is one of the worst GMs in the league, I could see him, if he's kept, I could see him, you know, maybe thinking, well, we could bring him back, got a QB, let's see, 4 year, let's just see. I could see that happening.
Yeah.
But if they clean house, they get rid of Ryan Pace, oh, yeah, it's a new head coach coming in there, and it should be.
Yeah, should be a new head coach coming in there, definitely. I want to see. It's similar to what we were talking about with Daryl Bevel being over there in Jacksonville. I want to see a different brain trust for Justin Fields. I want to see a different head coach right there working with Trevor Lawrence. So, to move on to the last two coaches that we have right here who are sitting on a questionable seat. The first one that I'll propose up here is David Culley. David Culley has 3 wins this year. He has the chance to get one more if they beat the Titans. which they already did. So maybe he can go ahead and get himself 4 wins this year. And I remember at the beginning of the preseason, I had this team slated for being the worst team in the league. Not possibly, but being the worst team in the league. They're not too far away from that. The only thing is while you can maybe not blame things on David Culley, I don't know what there is to keep him there that you're really going to look at. So, because A, if you would look at his record, well, it's not that impressive. If you're going to consult the other players that are on the roster, then you obviously don't know how many players on this team that were only signed to 1-year deals that aren't even going to be there next year.
Right.
So, like, I mean, it's going to be different to see. What I want to look at is this, and what I keep referencing within this coaching, quote-unquote, trust, whatever it is, with how abysmal this franchise has become as of late. We talked about this earlier in the year and haven't really revisited it up until this point, because why should we?
Right.
But in week 5, Nick Caserio, first-year GM, the guy that came over from New England, he told them when they were playing against the Patriots in a somewhat surprisingly close game, when the Patriots got into the red zone, he encouraged the defense to let them score so that their offense would have a little bit more time left on the clock when they got the ball. David Culley had been limiting what they could do offensively, they being the Patriots, throughout the course of this whole entire game. He didn't really agree with that, so he chose to coach the game as though he had planned from the day they put in their week 5 installs against the Patriots. And, well, they ended up losing the game. But I say all that to simply bring it back to the point of, if Nick Caserio is on the phone and on the horn and meddling in coaching decisions that David Culley is doing, and David Culley is going opposite of what he says, yeah, that type of dissension is probably a result of someone leaving. But I don't necessarily think that's a result of what David Culley did. David Culley's got to coach this game how he knows to coach this game. That's why you hired him. And if that type of meddling is going on and that type of tampering, and I don't want to say tampering because that means, like, you know, fines and all that sort of thing. It's nothing different than Al Davis did for when the game passed him by as an old guy.
Right.
But what in terms of retaining a job, if David Culley, who is a man who has everything to lose, and Nick Caserio, who's been recently hired as a GM, has a lot more leeway, then yeah, Casario's probably going to use him as the fall guy. Does it come this year or next year? I think just because of how bad it's been, they want to take some type of attention off of what this team is known as lately in the headlines. And yeah, he ends up using Culley as a fall guy.
What were people thinking? Like, how many games did people think they were going to win? Nobody thought they were going to win more than...
Right, yeah, no. We all thought they were going to be terrible, and they are.
You know what I mean? I'm trying to figure out, like, you know, people are, you know, really thinking or feeling like, well, he needs to be let go. Look how it went. Look how the season went, and look what he had to take on for one. I mean, they lucky they even found a head coach that wants to take the job. I mean, that's how I look at it. So much going on.
You'll find somebody.
Yeah, you know what I mean. But you
know,
yeah,
I know what you mean.
It was so bad. You found somebody that was willing to come in. He made it, and this is the only thing that I said that was good about the direction of this team was the staff that he put together. You know, we spoke on it recently. We spoke on it when we talked about the AFC South, the division preview. Go check that out if you haven't heard it yet. The staff he put together is well put. He got some really good guys underneath him. And he comes in. I know he's a first-year head coach. But, I mean, look what they had to endure. Look what they had to, you know, they didn't have the draft picks. They had the first draft pick to the third round. They had the whole Watson fiasco deal, which is still a fiasco. You still don't know what's going to happen with him.
Nothing roster-wise to work with.
Nothing to work with. Players are
nothing.
Gone. Traded away. You got the guy that left before him that traded away players for peanuts. I mean, what?
You forgot bubblegum wrappers.
Bubblegum wrappers. Even worse.
Yeah, no, not bubblegum, but wrappers.
The wrappers, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They did get that in return. Don't settle man short, bro.
This to me, I just feel like you got it. He's just another one. I just feel like, you know, now he don't got no crazy deal. I just feel like he deserves another year. There was no coach. There was no coach that was going to come in here and win them 7 games. It just wasn't going to happen. They would have been lucky to win 5. They're at 4. They're at 4 right now. So, I you know, me personally, man, yeah. I just feel like this team, you know, it doesn't matter who they were going to put. This team was going to be a loser this season. They weren't going to have too many. They weren't going to have that many wins. Here they are. You know, I get it. They've only had 2 impressive wins. They beat the Titans in Tennessee. And their most impressive one was against the Chargers, you know. And that was a dominating win. And we've seen what David Mills looked like. You know, we had him in our segment. You know, that's promising. You know, but I just, you know, and then they lost to the 49ers. But 49ers is a team that is probably going to make the playoffs. So, yeah, I feel like he deserves another chance. Will he get fired? I'm going to say no. I'm going to say no. Okay. But you know what? That was a good point, though. Nick doing kind of like that whole Al Davis, Jerry Jones thing. Well, Jerry Jones don't do it anymore to that extent. But trying to make the head coach do certain things, make moves, and, you know, create schemes and stuff like that. That is concerning, but I think that's more concerning for Nick than, I mean,
yeah, that's a bad GM move as opposed to a bad head coaching move. No, I'm with you on that.
Yeah, because, I mean, who's going to want to go to that? Who's going to really want to go to that team and be like, you know, he was doing what? Oh, yeah, pass on that. You already look bad. The roster already looked bad. Yeah.
We got one more head coach on our spindle. Got one more guy. Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll received a 5-year extension in 2020. Jody Allen, the de facto owner, RIP Paul, previous owner of the Blazers also, gave him that extension. She took over the team in 2018, and she hasn't really made any type of big sweeping ownership decisions. If you're Seattle, do you keep Pete Carroll and John Schneider going forward?
John Schneider, probably not. I mean, we've been talking about how bad he's been drafted for the last, like, 3 years, outside of the 1-2 drafts that he's had. But, yeah, Pete Carroll, I don't know if I really would get rid of him. I just feel like it's a bad season with them, but I don't know if I really blame him. I just think it's just a bad season. They just had a bad season. I think they probably need to, they're in the rebuilding mode. Now, I will say this, maybe they look at it like, okay, they want to go into the rebuilding mode. They want to start with maybe a fresh young mind, something kind of like what we were saying with Zimmer, you know, same thing with Pete, you know, he's not a bad coach, obviously, you know, and maybe Pete, maybe, you know, to get off what I was going to say real quick, maybe he wants to retire. That's another thing, too. I mean, he's getting up there in age. Does he want to go through a rebuilding process? You know, he may not even want to go through. So that's something that, you know, we'll consider. That may happen. But going back to that, yeah, if he gets let go, I think it's more so because they're going in rebuilding mode. They want to start something fresh. And he's really reached his peak, you know. That's pretty much it. Russ will probably be gone. And if they do that, Russ for sure will be out.
I think Russ probably gone either way.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a way that they run back Pete and Russ.
The only thing I could think of if Russ come back is if Russ come back, I think Pete is still there, but maybe the GM is gone.
Okay. Yeah, I could see that. I could see that happening.
You know what I mean? Because it's got to be one. I don't think Russ really has a problem with Pete. I know it's kind of been
I agree with you 100%.
No, I know you don't think. Yeah. No, I know you don't think that, but I know Russ has had a problem with that offensive line getting beat up, you know, him getting beat up behind that offensive line not being really built. And that all starts with the GM, the guy that's drafting, you know, that's where it starts. So I think if Russ comes back, Pete is still there with the new GM. But I don't think any of that happened. Pete, I'm going to go ahead and say Pete is probably gone, bro. I'm going to go ahead and say it. I'm going to say Pete is gone. Russ is gone. And the GM is gone, too. Yeah. I'm going to say all three.
Wow. I think that Russ is gone. Pete stays.
Okay.
And Schneider stays. And it alludes to what I was talking about earlier with Jody Allen. And the reason why is I would have to look at her behavior as a GM, which has honestly been a big mystery up until this point. She inherited the team in 2018. And since that time frame in which Paul passed, if you were to look at her movement and her action with the Blazers, which is the other team that she owned in the NBA, or that her father owned and that she has inherited, and if you were to look at her reactions with the Seattle Seahawks, she knew she had something there with both of those franchises. Both of those organizations speak to the community that is around them. And so therefore, she'll be late on getting rid of the brain trust that at least elevated them to whatever heights it is they're at now. We all saw that with Neil Olshey being a late exit with the Blazers. He should have been gone before that. We all saw that with Terry Stotts being a later exit than he should have as well. And I think Pete is just a little bit more, he's done a little bit more to deserve that late exit than though their counterparts that exist within the NBA franchise that Jody is looking at. So if one bad season in which they, like I said earlier at the start of the segment, they gave this man an extension that went from 2020 until 2025. If one bad season was going to thwart that type of projection for this man that you're giving a lot of the assets to 2 years after your father dies, especially when it was a year when Russell Wilson hurt his finger, I mean, and the rest of your division we all crowned as being the best one in the NFL, which I think we still, for the most part, at least if it's not number one, it's number two, agree with. I think she gives him one more year. But the one guy I think that goes is Russ. Because I think that magic that they wanted to unlock and untap with Russ, I do think that's gone.
And see, that's my thing right there. I think he is gone off his own doing. I don't think you – it's a good point. It's a good point with as far as – Yeah, Jody Allen. As far as her keeping him, I definitely can see that. And it is hard, you know, to see him getting fired. But I just don't know if he wants to go through a rebuilding process.
That's why I think he goes.
No, I'm talking about Pete.
Oh, Pete? Oh.
Because yeah. I think if Russ is gone, now they can. Now, you know, obviously we got free agency. The players can be traded. You know, we've heard of different players going everywhere, QBs. So I mean, it could happen. But if he is stuck where they're where it don't look like nobody's gonna go over there, like Russ leaves, you know, is there somebody out there that maybe? Because I don't see Pete really working with a young kid. I just don't know if
he was quoted saying that if he didn't have Russell Wilson, he would have retired a lot sooner than obviously than he has because he still hasn't. So
yeah, see, I don't even know
He said that.
That's what I'm saying. That's even more onto what I think is going to happen. I really think he's gone. I think he's gone if Russ is gone.
Okay.
I think he'll retire.
All right. It's going to be a lot to look forward to. And you guys can look forward to this ad from one of our amazing sponsors. We'll be back very soon with the Cover Zero podcast.
Hey, guys. Brandy from Cover Zero. If you are anything like me, you are not getting your morning started without a fresh cup of brew. Well, I have the perfect coffee for you. I am Wise Coffee Company. You're looking for a whole bean single origin coffee from Guatemala called the Carmel Trust, or my personal favorite, Tropical Real Estate. They also have wonderful blends straight from El Salvador and Ethiopia. You can enjoy these delicious roasts as cold brews, espressos, or even iced coffees. Just head over to imwisecoffeeco.com Use the code COVERZERO on checkout to receive your 10% discount and support this Black-owned business. Start your morning off right. I am Wise Coffee Company.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Appreciate you listening, all as always. And the next part that we're going to transition into is to our two game previews for Week 18. There are two games that have a lot of playoff implications on the line, and you've heard us reference them at some point throughout the show up to this juncture. And we're going to start with the NFC one, which is the Niners at the Rams. Now, the Niners, they are underdogs with -4. Rams are favored by 4. The money line sits at +170 for the Niners and -200 for the Rams, with the over-under at 44 points. Now, what's on the line for this game? If the Niners win, they are in the playoffs. If the Rams win, they take the NFC West. The division is theirs. And in doing so, they lock up the #2 seed. So the only time that they would have to travel is to go to Lambeau to play against Aaron Rodgers. Coming into this game, as we record this on Tuesday, leading up to the weekend game, Jimmy Ward, K'Wan Williams, both test positive, not test positive, but at least land themselves on the COVID protocols. We'll have to be able to remain, you know, attentive to what's going on with those guys leading up to the Sunday game. But the only other person that is in question to play is Maurice Hurst, defensive tackle for the Niners. Someone that Josiah and I know, and those Raider fans listening know, and maybe some Niner fans hopefully know, because he's on your squad right now, right, is a very viable rotational guy to have in the trenches. The Rams, injury-wise, they aren't really missing anyone that wasn't already previously on IR, but they are adding Cam Akers to the fold. It's crazy to me because this guy tore his Achilles in July and is set to come back and play. And McVay was talking about in a presser how he thought that this guy might have been able to come back a week earlier. Adding a lot of explosiveness and a lot of different options to this Rams game if he's at least right. Josiah, I'm going to start it off with you. These teams played earlier this year. The Niners were very dominant. And as Sean McVay and Kyle Shanahan have gone head-to-head in the NFL, this is a very one-sided matchup, even though they tend to come from the same offensive brain trust as far as the head coaching tree goes. What is it to you that is? Let me ask you it this way. Is there a reason why Kyle has the leg up on Sean over these last six games?
I really don't know how he's up that many games.
Yeah, I was hoping you had an answer for me because I don't know either.
I don't know, bro. I'm gonna keep it funky, bro. I have no clue, because the Rams has been the better team. They've been the better team for sure over these last. I mean, I know. Okay, so the Niners went to the Super Bowl. What was it? It was 3 years ago.
2019.
Yeah. Okay. So a couple years ago, they win. Rams are still good that year. But, I mean, outside of that, the Rams, I don't know. I just feel like the Rams have been the better team, especially over these last 2 years. And for them not to still be able to get a win is just, I don't know. Kyle just, he really knows how to coach against Sean McVay. And like you said, they both have the same type of the scheme. I mean, they come from the same tree. So, I don't. But yeah, the Niners just really, Kyle Shanahan, the Niners just have the Rams number. And I really don't see no different happening this Sunday or Saturday. Or Sunday? No, Sunday.
Sunday. It's Sunday at 1:25.
I wish they would have moved it up.
They need to move that to Saturday. Like, why?
I don't know.
Like, what is there on Saturday? Like, okay, there's some games on Saturday, but they don't matter.
They don't. They really don't.
I mean, anyway, sorry. I'm screaming at, you know, you.
No, I get it.
And everybody listening, like you got control. it's crazy where that has ended up fitting in with itself. The other part of this game that I really want to discuss is Trey Lance and where he fits in as a factor, as an X factor, as a difference maker, or whatever tagline people want to call it. And we've now seen two games where Kyle Shanahan has elected to start Trey. And the QB running game each time has, I would say each time it's not added up to what at least my preseason expectations were. And I would say that each time it doesn't necessarily need to, because no game has been more important than right now. But at the same time, it hasn't really like took off to any type of degree. Like if I watch Josh Allen, if I watch Jalen Hurts, if I watch, of course, Lamar, I mean, he's not even somebody you can put in that level. Kyler too, because just the way, just how different they are as runners. This quarterback run game hasn't really reached a different level yet. And it's a small sample size, only two games of Trey to do so.
Right.
But each time we're seeing just a little more. And I'll hang my hat on that for now, is that we're seeing just a little bit more with Trey. Against the Texans, we saw them incorporate counter bash. And we saw Trey, they only literally ran it two plays. And counter bash, what that is, it's a guard tackle pull with the quarterback in the gun. He can either give it to the running back, who then runs it opposite of the pull, or he keeps it himself and runs with the pull. But the difference in the Niners offense is that when he, let's say the guard tackle pull is opposite of the tight end side, the lead blocker then becomes George Kittle, as opposed to other teams who are doing that with, let's just say, somebody not named George Kittle as the lead blocker. And that makes a world of a difference, and we all know that. So we saw that a little bit with the Texans, and I just want to continue to see what Kyle does to unlock that. Trey himself has, he's able to make secondary reads. He's not just completely terminated when it comes time to, like, they take away his first read, and he completely panics, the play's over. But he's learning how to navigate those reactionary and secondary and next level type of plays at the NFL level. And only being two starts in to do that, great, bro. Like great. Like, it takes time for these guys to be able to harness in all these different things that go into an NFL playbook, that go into an NFL game, that it takes to deal with the speed the NFL is, to be able to operate an offense at a high level. And so far, Trey has made incremental steps to do so. Like, he's laying those stepping stones down. And Kyle's doing a good enough job for him to be able to make those improvements where he needs to make them. I don't know if he's making enough of those for him to win this game that's coming up this weekend. Yeah, I don't know if he is just yet. Raheem Morris is, really, honestly, he's a defensive coordinator. That is we've talked about how Brian Flores is this is a pro Brian Flores podcast. This was a pro Raheem Morris podcast as well. And this Rams team is much different than this team that the Niners played in November. All right, Vaughn, OBJ, they were new to that squad when they first played them. OBJ ran a total of 11 routes in that game. There was a guy named Ben Skowronek who ran 33 routes in that game. Let me just tell you this much. It's not going to be that way again. Odell is clicking into the fold of this team. And that's the way. That's just how they've worked lately. There was a play that I keep bringing up in the back of my head about how Odell has begun to find his fit in this Rams offense. And it was against the Cardinals. It was a play where he was the backside X receiver, running a dig route on a concept, and he was the third read in the progression. When that was called a lot with Cleveland, Baker Mayfield couldn't hit that. When Stafford hit that one against the Cardinals in the second half, he pointed the sideline, he pulled his triggers out, you know, he made the sound. He didn't even look before he threw that ball. They have just established that next type of level of chemistry that just makes him, being the third receiver, in that offense that much more explosive and that much more viable. And working against this Niners team, when that happens, that's going to be a key. That's going to be a big key. I think that one thing that Sean McVay does in this one to protect Stafford is that he uses more runs, and he tends to utilize that as a way for Stafford to just not have those bonehead plays that he does.
That point right there.
Like
the boneheaded plays.
Those boneheaded plays, bro. Like, we saw these boneheaded plays pop up the last time these squads played against each other.
Right.
His first interception was the big example of that. He just uncorked a deep one to Odell for no reason. Now, the second pick, Jimmy Ward got both of those picks in that game, by the way. But the second pick that Jimmy Ward got off that went off of Higbee's hands, that was just a drop. That was just a drop. There, like, nothing on Stafford for that one. But no one can blame Stafford. No one can blame anybody else but Stafford for that first one. Just, like, stupid interception. And I think McVay is realizing where he's at with his quarterback. So, for myself, I think Raheem is going to have something for Trey. The Rams are top 10 in blitz rate this year. They are also second in sacks. And in the small sample size, like I said earlier, that we have for Trey, when he is kept clean, his QB rating is 110. When he's under pressure, it's literally cut in half. 55. And we've seen that unfold in just this small time. This is no indictment on what Trey will be. I see a lot of traits with this kid that I just love. You know what I mean? And I just want him to get more reps and more time. Just, this is not the time for him. Give me the Rams. Sorry, CJ. Don't fire me from a team. No, he never would. He's the best human ever. Give me the score. 27-20, Rams.
Okay.
Where do you fall in line with this one?
That's a really good breakdown. I'm going the other way, though, man. I do think the Rams got to get the run game going. Cam Akers coming back is big. But, I mean, coming off of Achilles and coming back this soon, I don't think he's going to be that explosive. I think he's going to be in the game for sure. But it's just hard for me seeing him. It's hard me seeing him really having 100 yards or anything like that.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. Does he change your projection of what this Rams game could be? Like, because I still think Sony Michel's viable.
Right. If he's healthy, yeah. If he's healthy, I mean, he's ready to go, and he's healthy, no rust or anything like that. Yeah, he definitely changes the game plan for the Rams for sure. But, I mean, obviously on offense for sure. But because he hasn't played, I just don't see him being a huge factor. And then he's going against a team that's been really good stopping the run. I mean, the Niners only allowed, they've only allowed 3.2 yards per rush attempt over the past seven games. The last time.
That's impressive as hell.
Really impressive, bro. And they went against some good teams that's able to run the ball, over the last seven games. The last team that had 4+ yards that they played was the Rams, and they only had 52 yards rushing total.
Yeah, and the Rams are behind the eight ball because that game was 14-0 first quarter.
So, I mean, they had to get away from it. But, I think that's what the Rams need to do, and I don't think they're going to be able to do it because the Niners are really good right now stopping the run. And Trey Lance, you brought up some good points. And for the rest of the Niner fans and even with CJ, just be patient, because I think what Kyle's doing right now is pretty good. I think Trey Lance, I know CJ mentioned him not letting him rip, letting Trey Lance, really go out there and do his thing. But we got to understand, and you brought it up, it takes time. You can't just, sometimes QBs and Trey Lance, we figured, the ceiling, what we was all impressed with Trey Lance as far as him being able to get to a high ceiling. But we all knew he was a raw talent. He still needed some work. And what he did, what he was able to do recently, I know it was against the Texans, but still, it's still an NFL game. You got to play. Texans is coming off a big win off the Chargers, and they were feeling pretty good. Trey Lance went in there, and I thought he looked good. He made some really, really good throws, some throws that only his tight end wide receivers can get. That one sharp throw that he made to, I believe it was George Kittle, it was a better catch than throw, but, I mean, it was a really, really nice throw.
My favorite throw of his would have been the one that he pulled the deep one to Debo.
Debo, yeah, the play action.
Yeah, they ran that play action, and I couldn't believe Desmond King didn't pick him up. Yeah, like, he did everything right assignment wise, and he was like, "You move there, move over here, cool." But then he just let Debo go. Well, that's what Debo do. I mean, he's so good.
Say that's my boy Debo, though. So you know,
he's just so good.
He's nice, bro. But yeah, I like what Trey is doing, man. I like what Trey's doing. But again, I like what this defense is doing before. And I think, and another thing too, going back to the Rams, not only does the run game got to get going, which I don't think is going to happen, that pass rush, that defensive line, that's a really good point that you brought up. They have to get to Trey. They have to get to him. And, you know, obviously getting to a rookie QB, you know, and like you said, the percentage going down when he's pressured like that, I think that's a big deal. So they have to get to him if they want to win this game. But I don't know. I see the Niners doing enough, man. They're able to run the ball better. They're passing attack. You know, I'm not going to say it's better than the Rams. I mean, the Rams have a better QB there. They have a better passing attack. But just Stafford, we just talked about it. Sometimes you just have these boneheaded decisions. I just don't.
It's so weird with him, man. It's like he'll have like five plays in a game where you're like, there's a limited amount of people that breathe oxygen on this earth that can make that play.
Right.
Then there's like two plays in a game where it's like, bro, I don't even do that on Madden.
Yeah.
What is wrong with you?
Right.
Like how someone can embody both of those things.
Yeah.
It boggles the mind.
Yeah. That's a fact, bro. That's a fact. And part of it is the O-line too. He holds on to the ball a lot, but the O-line is not great. You know, I mean, they're allowing, he's the second most out of the QB hits, he's been hit 67 times. That's the second most. And he's getting pressured a lot.
I think some of that is on him.
That's what I said. Him holding on to the ball.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know, it's a veteran. I mean.
But that's just his. He's just going to do that. I feel like Stafford is just going to do that. Like, nah, my arm's good enough. I only need 0.2 seconds. Like,
right, bro. I just, you know, so the Rams, the talent-wise, they're better. They are better. But just, I feel like the way the Niners are playing right now, you know, they are playing some really good football. I like what they're doing right now. They're again, though, the Rams' chance is really pressuring Lance, getting to him, making him, you know, make mistakes, and coming out of there with a victory. They got, you know, I can't say they got more to lose. The Niners, they don't lose. If they lose, they don't make the playoffs, so they got more to lose. But the Rams, like you said, you see where they positioned at. They want to win this game. I just like the way the Niners are playing right now. So I'm going to go with them. They get their sixth straight win. I'm going to say 33-27 Niners.
Niners sitting at +4 on my bookie. +170 odds. If you want to take them just on the money line straight up. Just saying, if that's where you're at, and if you're listening and you agree with Josiah, go ahead and do that. Go to mybookie.ag, drop in the promo code COVERZERO, and cash in big. Y'all already know what it is. Y'all already know. Listen to who's on the show and what's on the line. I don't even got to define it. Bro, how hyped are you?
I'm hyped. I'm hyped, dog. You know what I'm saying? I'm hyped. Cannot wait. And they did the right thing by flexing it to Sunday night too. So, you know, this is the game. I mean, what better way to end the season? You know,
mm-hmm. What better way to put your team in a position to earn it?
Right. Which is what we had to do all season.
Right.
We have been through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. We are talking about, for if you're a first time listener, that would be the only way you don't know what we're talking about, which is the Chargers visiting the Raiders in Week 18. Josiah and I being silver and black brethren. The Chargers are favored by 3. The money line is +145 for the Raiders, and the over-under is at 49.5 for this game. These two teams played once earlier in SoFi this season, and the Chargers really gave it to the Raiders. They commanded this game up front. As far as how the Raiders approach this game, to turn the tide. They're looking at a much different unit than they had way back in October. What would you, let me start the conversation off this way, bro. What is the most different from this Raider team now that the Chargers first faced when they played them earlier in the year?
We're running the ball better. Running the ball better. Offensive line is playing better. You know, players are, the play calling is different. You know, I think we just seen what we did. We did it in another game, too. I think maybe the week prior. I don't know if it was versus Denver or the Browns. But we scored, I believe, on our first drive, I think, on one of those games. But we did it against the Colts. And that's something that we struggled with all season. Mm-hmm. All season. And that was something we couldn't get no points. In the second, the start of the third quarter, it was 21-0, I believe.
Yes.
We were getting blown out. And so this team now is playing better again up front in the trenches. We're running the ball better. We're playing more aggressive in the first, just in general, the whole throughout the whole game, but especially in the first drive. So those are the things that I see that we're doing different, you know, that they haven't seen yet from us.
Yeah. No, I agree with that 100% because when we played against the Chargers earlier in the year, three straight three and outs with zero total yards of offense in the first half. There's no way you can expect to win an NFL game when that's half of your game's output.
Right.
And now going forward into this one, when we first played the Chargers, Justin Herbert's average depth of target in the first game was 9.2 yards. Down the field. And since that point, we've had many conversations about how Joe Lombardi has like reeled in how much he wants to let that howitzer cook that Justin Herbert has attached to his right arm. And I mean, with the season on the line, I think he's going to go ahead and unleash it. And what really stood out to me rewatching this game in the All 22 today was how similar the defensive game plan approaches were from both defensive coordinators. And that was kind of weird to see. That was unexpected. Both defensive coordinators, or at least both masterminds of each team's defense, are Brandon Staley for the Chargers and then Gus Bradley for the Raiders. They have a different way of looking at defense philosophically. Brandon Staley is one of the innovators of the two high scheme on the back end and then one-on-ones up front, basically meaning like with your four down defensive linemen, each one of those guys is hat on hat to an offensive lineman to eliminate them being able to get to the second level to create double teams. Now, Gus Bradley, on the other hand, is a single high safety guy. He wants five men more so on the line of scrimmage. He wants to crowd that box. But both teams out of those structures approach the game playing cover three or cover one. And when you're going to play cover three or cover one, the person that's going to have the advantage is whichever team owns the trenches. And last game, the team that owns the trenches were the Chargers. They were the Chargers. Joey Bosa had an absolute field day against Alex Leatherwood. Since that game, Alex Leatherwood has kicked into guard and played better. But nonetheless, that means that our right tackle is still Brandon Parker, where Joey Bosa will still be. And Brandon Parker has had his share of bad games against Joey Bosa. So the Raiders are going to have to do something to provide help to Brandon Parker on that side, even when the Chargers elect not to blitz. The one thing that the Chargers have been susceptible to throughout the course of this, it was something you mentioned, that running game. It's something the Raiders have done better since the first time that these two teams met. And it's something that the Chargers throughout the whole entire course of the season have had a kryptonite towards. And I think the Raiders really look to attack that, especially considering how much better Andre James has been in the blocking game since the season has progressed. And they're going to look to go there, and they're going to look to stick to it. Greg Olsen has recognized sticking to it provides a lot of benefits to your offense, especially when you have it working. Like they did against a better defense in the Broncos, than it comes to when you compare them against the Chargers as far as run defense goes. Right. So that's a couple of things that I'm going to be looking at. Do you have the Raiders winning, Josiah?
Yes, sir.
Why?
I just think we're going to be able to run the ball. I think we are going to play better in the trenches than we did the first game, and I think that's really going to be what really stands out and allows us to really kind of control the game, control the time of possession, you know. And again, going back to the running game that we kind of already spoke about, it's not that Josh Jacobs is really having 100 yards or anything like he did versus the Browns. But we're just running more efficient. You know, we're just running the ball more efficient. Even if he's not having that many yards, we're successful with our runs. Even when Peyton Barber comes in, he's running the ball well, you know. And so this offensive line, I think that's what's really going to really be the reason why we win this game. I also think, too, our third downs, you know, we've been able to stay on the field a lot better over these last few games here. You know, we've been completing on third downs, and they haven't. They actually been one of the worst teams on third downs, you know. So I think that is also going to be a key point in this game. I also feel, too, you know, one thing I am worried about is with Justin. I mean, obviously Justin Herbert, you know, I mean, he's just a dog, you know. He doesn't really turn over the ball. I mean, matter of fact, he has a percentage rate of 1% as far as his turnover rate when he's pressured. I mean, he doesn't really turn over the ball.
Yeah, under pressure, he's been unbelievable his first 2 years in the league.
It's crazy. So, he's one of those guys you have to bring him down. And that's what I'm hoping. I mean, we see a lot of QB hits and pressures from Max. You know, I hope that he can, you know, get a couple sacks. You know, Yannick, same thing. Quentin Jefferson. Solomon Thomas, we need to be able to bring him down, you know, because if not, if he's extending plays, I think that's going to hurt us. But I think if we're able to run the ball and control the time of possession, then I think, you know, he won't be on the field as much. And with us, you could say the same thing. Well, you know, what about you guys? You guys are not great overall, you know, so you look at the stats, rankings, and all of that. But over these last few weeks, we've been pretty good. You know, I know Jonathan Taylor had 100 plus yards, 108 yards, whatever it was, but he didn't wreck the game. It wasn't enough to really just take over the game, you know. So,
yeah, there was a point where I wondered if he was going to, and he didn't.
It didn't happen. We didn't, you know, I mean, we did enough, you know, to stop that. And then Gus Bradley, he actually changed up some of his scheme work versus the Colts, which is a little bit, you know, surprising. You got to see him really, you know, be in disguise mode. He had some of his players, you know, in disguise, you know, where he was, I lost my train of thought, but they was disguising, you know. He don't really show too many defensive coverages like that, where he got players, you know, doing anything like that. He normally stick to, like what you said, the cover three. You know, but
he normally works off that cover three, cover one. Right. Then we played against Indy. He ran Trayvon on that one blitz. Like that. That was so, like, I couldn't believe when he ran Trayvon. That was the first time I've ever seen Trayvon blitz.
Blitz, yeah. Because normally it's either Nate Hobbs or it's either Jonathan Abram. And he knows he has to change it up a little bit because obviously Abram is not out there.
You're right. That's the first time he's ever brought that blitz from the third level. And then when he brought that blitz, if you, like, watch that play, he rotates Teamer at the snap to the deep look. So the quarterback thinks, oh, I don't have one high. Here comes the free. No, you do.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? Like that's just, you don't see that from Gus a lot, but he did it. Yeah. That's a good point.
He did some different things, man. And I think that really, you know, caused Carson Wentz to have, you know, a bad game. You know, I know a lot of people, you know, don't think Carson Wentz is a good QB. He's okay. I mean, you know, he's not. I don't think he's the worst. Some people think he's the worst. He's not the worst. Drew Lock is out there starting. If he's starting, then Carson Wentz is not the worst. So, you know, he's good enough to get the job done. Didn't happen versus us. But yeah, I think we got this, man. I really do. I think Derek Carr. I do think too with Derek Carr. You know, he's been wanting to get to the playoffs. Everybody, I think the Raider Nation is kind of like split, divided as far as liking Carr, not liking Carr. There's a few in the middle. But for the most part, we're divided with him. And I just think one thing I can say about Derek Carr, and we can agree to this. I think everybody, even the people that don't like Derek Carr, is he's clutch. He's clutch. If he needs to make a throw, that one pass, he's going to make it. You know, and I think he knows that he needs to put this team on his back. If Darren Waller comes back, that's another thing. Chargers are not good guarding tight ends at all. So
yeah,
you know,
well, they got that when they played us the first time. Derwin did get a pick when he was matched up on Waller. Yeah, but if we start to incorporate that run game against them, then
yeah, that's gonna help. That's gonna help. And Carr has to stop with some of these, you know, some of the interceptions. Some of my, you know.
He got to stop with them pop fly checkdowns.
Yeah, that too.
Like if you get man and someone's beat, okay. But other than that, I don't want to see a pop fly checkdown into a zone. It just frustrates me so much.
Yeah, no, I get it.
It's like punt on third down without punting on third down. Okay.
Right. Yeah, Carr has some, I mean, he has anyway. Those. No, you got a point. He has those flaws that he just never really escaped, really. Same things he's been doing since he came into the league. But I just hope this game right here, and I think he will. He's going to play a solid game. I think the run game will be straight with that. And I think we at least sack Justin Herbert at least two or three times in this game. I got the Raiders winning this one.
And we got it. They got after him. Max was making do.
Yeah, no, he was, but he wasn't able to really bring him. You talking about the first game?
Yeah, in the first game, but that's been Max all year. Like Yannick leads our team in sacks, but Mac can't bring him down.
That's, yeah, and that can't
But happen. He's active all game long.
Yeah, he is. He's second in the league in QB pressures, I believe.
So. Right, but, like, not even in the top 10. Not close to the top 10 in sacks.
Sacks, right. No, you're right. You're right.
Yeah.
You know, so that's what I'm saying. They have to – and even if it's not him, it's got to be a couple players on that team. You know, that's bringing him down, Justin Herbert, that is. So, yeah, I got the squad winning this one, man. Send them off to 10-7 into the playoffs. I'm going to say, you know what? No, I'm going to say 27-23 Raiders.
Wow. When we did like a mid-season check-in on who I thought was going to get there, I was like, sure, why not with the Raiders because of how wide open this year has been. And so I'm going to go ahead and latch on to that if we just got win and end scenario with a division rival. I'll take it. We had talked about how Max and somebody, Solomon Thomas, there's a chance we get Jonathan Hankins back for this one, which if we do, huge. There's a chance we get, who else? There's another defensive lineman, Carl Nassib, back for this one. I mean, look, that's two pieces that you can plug in, which the Raiders normally do, which is something I got to give Gus credit for, and you talked about this in the offseason, was like grabbing all these bodies and use them like hockey subs. And it's worked. It's worked better than I thought it, honestly, just from our pressure from our front four on a routine basis, the way they handle their gaps on a routine basis. I have not seen a front four like this for this Raiders team for years and years and years and years. Granted, we were talking about this off air with when we had Khalil Mack, and whenever Khalil Mack was Khalil Mack and Mario Edwards was healthy, which was not that long, we had something with it.
Right.
But now we honestly have something with it like throughout the course of a whole year. We don't blitz a lot, but our pressure rate is high. And that goes to the players on the field mostly, and then secondary-wise, it goes to Gus. So... yeah, got to give them their props. And since we're here, man, I got to pick the Raiders to win. And to further allude to what that offensive line can't do against our front, Corey Linsley, who is the best Chargers offensive lineman, their center, is questionable for this game. They still have Rashawn Slater playing left tackle, Storm Norton, who is their right side tackle, since Brian Bulaga has been on IR for the majority of the year. He's going to get killed and worked by whichever person he lines up on, be it Max or be it Yannick. It's most likely going to be Yannick because Max is that Leo guy who's playing on the strong side. And I just expect the Chargers to play it that way. The one thing for us is that I think when they do get Bosa lined up on Parker, I talked about this a little bit earlier, we got to chip him. Got to provide some help. Tight end, running back. Yeah. I don't want to see a lot of scat protections. Some, sure, some. Because I don't think the Chargers can hang with. The Chargers didn't have anybody to guard Hunter in the first game. They tried to put Asante Samuel on him. But, I mean, a lot of teams have tried to put a lot of dudes on Hunter. And, well, we've seen that result.
Right, right. Yeah. They're definitely going to need to help Brandon Parker out. They're going to need. And I'm sure they're going to have a game plan for Joey Bosa. They just got to. They got
right.
To,
but I think, honestly, and they didn't do this in the first game.
He didn't.
If they put Bosa over Colton, they did not do this in the first game. Bosa normally doesn't even line up over the left tackle traditionally. He lines up over the right.
Right.
But let's say they make that switch. I don't provide help there until I show that I need to. I will leave Colton in that one-on-one.
Oh, yeah, I'm okay with that.
But if Bosa's going where he's going to go on the right side and it's Parker, oh, yeah, we got to provide some. He needs some help.
He needs help.
He needs help from a tight end, from a running back and a tight end, from a fullback, from a gopher. I don't care who it is. Like, help him out. But anyway, you said 27-23. I got 26-23. I just cannot put the energy of this team enduring all that they did throughout the course of 2021.
Right.
To play the first regular season game that will ever take place in the new year in the NFL. And for me to not pick them when the playoffs are on the line. 26-23, Raiders. We appreciate y'all listening. Keep it locked with the Cover Zero podcast. Check us out at tssaw.com. Be sure to visit up and hit up all of our sponsors. I'm working on a piece about the Dallas Cowboy defense that should hit the webpage in about a week or so. And until then, we'll see you on Monday morning. Peace.
That's our show. Be sure to email us with your questions, comments, and statements to coverzeropodcast@gmail.com. To find all of the links to follow us on social media and also to find more exclusive content, visit us at tssaw.com. See you next week.